Welcome to our podcast, F the System with Abby and Gabby.
The podcast for millennials who decided to F the system and follow their dreams. Okay, today we're going to be talking to Danny Duty, who's actually one of my really good friends. I would almost call him a serial entrepreneur. He started a couple businesses in private labeling and drop shipping, and now he's working on his own CBD line. So why don't you start by telling us your story? Where did you come from? Like, how did you get started with everything that you're doing?
Cool. Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Chicago, as you know, Gabby. We've been friends for a pretty long time. And I went to school. I went to college at Marquette for the first 2 years and then DePaul for the second two. The first 2 years of Marquette, it was really fun for me. I wasn't getting that good of grades. I was definitely having some trouble balancing just like the college partying and like the homework and stuff. And then, yeah, I switched to DePaul. I took it from there. I finished with DePaul a couple of years ago, and you know, the last year I was there is when I really started kind of dipping my toe in to e-commerce and trying to do some entrepreneurial, like go-getter projects. And so that's when, if you guys were curious about like the drop shipping and stuff, that's when I started with all those like little drop shipping projects where I made everything pretty cookie cutter. I had like two or three brands or so where, you know, I created the website, figured out what products I'm going to sell, what angles I'm going to take. And then I really just, the one big decision I had to make there was with hiring the Facebook advertiser. But, yeah, I don't know. What else did you guys want to know?
Can you talk a little bit about dropshipping? Because, like, I kind of know what it is. I mean, I know what it is. Tell me if I'm right. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's when, like, you don't have an actual product, right? Like, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have an actual product. And, like, basically you're just, like, taking items off, like, other websites, like, listings, right? And then you're basically marking them up and then selling them on your own platform, and then you ship the other product, the person's, or have the person's product shipped to them?
That's all totally accurate.
Okay.
I haven't been in drop shipping in at least like 6 to 8 months, so I'm probably a little scratchy on like what's new in that industry, but you basically source something. It's most of the time it's a product from China or Eastern Europe or somewhere that seems a little sketchier to like the end recipient of that product. And you link it up to your website, whatever platform you're using, and you just kind of mark it up. You can either have the dropshipper, you can work out an agreement where they put your like branding, they put your like logo and company and stuff in the package, or I know most people are just taking kind of the laziest approach possible where they're just sending the products with a lot of Chinese writing on them. So
that's
the gist of it. It's definitely, I was happy to get away from it. It's definitely the path of least resistance. I think it's the least sustainable. It's reasonably easily scalable. You have to be really good, but, you know, it's definitely the easiest route to gaining, you know, whether you just want an extra revenue stream, like some play around money, or whether you want to really make something out of it. It's definitely the quickest way to doing that, I'd say.
It literally like almost doesn't seem legal. Like, I remember when someone was first explaining it to me, I was like, so they don't like have a product, they're not shipping it, like they're shipping someone else's product and they're just marking it up. And like, whoever was telling me, they're like, yeah, that's capitalism. Like, that's like what America is. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know like you could do that. But I mean, it makes sense, but like, it just seems too easy almost.
Yeah. It is really easy. I think it didn't make me feel good in what I was like selling. A lot of times when I was doing the drop shipping, it wasn't my first attempt at creating a company. It's just kind of something I fell into after I failed with my first. But, yeah, I think my big problem with it is you don't get a say in product quality. You know, you don't get a say in the product selection, and you're really just at the mercy of, you know, if the entity that you're dropshipping from at the time, if they have like orders stacked up or anything like that, then yours are going to be, you know, last on the list. And you're really at the mercy of the manufacturing company. Well, but yeah, it's definitely like a cowboy industry, and it's pretty wild seeing some of these guys who are making, like, you know, there's, I think it's called like the 10-figure club, where, five figure, like 10,000. There's like a 5-figure, like 10,000 a day club that everyone really wants to be in. You know, it translates to like $3 million a year, so that's a lot.
What was your first business that you started? The one that you just mentioned that failed?
Oh, yeah. So
I want to hear more.
This was a vitamin and supplement company called Doctors Recommended.
I remember this. And I remember when you were doing this.
I bet. I was probably trying to push all my supplements.
Good for you.
Yeah. So this one, I started in college. I was majoring in finance at DePaul, and I was basically just using my internship money going into my senior year. I was using that money. I think I had like an extra $4,000 or so from the internship. I used that to start I'm not sure if your listeners would know private labeling. I used that to start a private label brand. And basically the gist of that is you find a manufacturer, in my case, it was supplements, and they have all sorts of, you know, stock formulas and kind of like ready-made products where the only customization that you really need to make is putting your label on. So they put your label on for you just for an extra fee. And a lot of these guys actually go as far as drop shipping the product for you. So they will store it for you. There's, you know, probably a short or long-term storage fee associated with that. And they will ship it out to your customers as long as you send them the order details in some sort of Excel file. They'll ship it out to your end customers on a kind of like a per item fee as well. So they're charging you a little bit every step of the way. But, you know, if you're just a good marketer, you don't want to take the time in setting up your own warehouse or shipping and logistics and stuff like that, then that's also a really legitimate and cool form of dropshipping.
Yeah, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, yeah, that's so really knowledgeable.
Cool. Yeah, man.
I can't believe this is all, like, in college. Like, you're in college, yeah, just doing all this on the side.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I was actually, that was working out really well my senior year of college. And I think by the time I started school for that year, it was in August, and I was doing about $200 or $300 a day, and I just had my first product online, and that was actually all through Amazon, through the Jeez. Amazon platform. And so I just thought it was so cool. I was always showing my buddies, and I was like, oh my god, if I can do this with one product, I'm just gonna roll out five more. And so I did that. Eventually it took a turn for the worse, but it was really fun and lasted. I learned a lot of cool stuff, and a lot of the stuff I learned there, I'm actually incorporating into the company that we're creating right now. So it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, that's really cool. I remember that now. I totally forgot about that.
I bet you did.
What's the company that you're working on right now?
So since you guys are on the West Coast, I'm sure a lot more of your listeners will know what CBD is.
Oh, yeah, CBD is huge.
I love CBD.
Okay, cool. Yeah, all the younger generation over there is definitely a lot more progressive than on the East Coast, where, you know, a lot of my friends over here still don't know what it is. But yeah, I'm in the CBD space now, more on a business-to-business, like, wholesale scale. Do you guys want me to start going into the CBD a little bit? Or?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, let's bring it. So for your listeners to understand, I guess, where we're at in the CBD space, I'd like to first give them an understanding of how CBD is made. So you take an industrial hemp plant, which is, you know, totally legal nationwide, according to, you know, this new 2018 farm bill that just came out. And the only requirement is it has to be below 0.3 THC. So you just can't get high at all from it or anything. And so you take the plant, you grow it on a farm, and you take the plant, when you chop it up, it's called milling, and that turns it into something that most people refer to as biomass, which is just still the, you know, organic plant matter. And so you take this biomass, you put it through an extraction process using either CO2 or ethanol, and that turns it into an actual raw CBD product that we refer to as crude oil. And crude oil is basically just a CBD product with between 50 and 60% CBD content in it. The remaining, let's say it's 50% CBD, then that means the remaining 50%, you know, of the stuff that you have is going to be your other plant compounds like terpenes and some wax and some fatty acids and stuff. And then from this crude oil, you have to take it through a distillation process, much like you would, you know, like tobacco or anything like that. And the distillation takes it to, you know, just a more pure form. Every step in this process is just to, the end game is just to take the CBD to a more pure product so you can then formulate it to the end customer at the end of the day. And so where we come in is right now, you know, we're still forming everything, but we have a few contracts in place to receive shipments monthly of crude oil. We're going to get a large amount in liters of crude oil every month, and we're setting up a distillation laboratory. I just got done in Atlanta giving a few rounds of interviews last weekend, which was really cool and pretty lucrative. And
wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was actually my first time giving these all-day interviews like that. It was pretty interesting. So we're setting up that laboratory. I think in-house, our main goal is to get really good at distillation. So taking the CBD crude oil at 50% and bringing it to a more value-added product, the CBD distillate, between, you know, 80 and 90% CBD, stuff that you can actually put in products. And we want to get good at making that CBD oil in-house. And we're working on a couple different deals with companies based out of the UK right now, just to source a different product of CBD called CBD isolate, which is just, you know, 99.5 to 99.9% CBD. So basically that's just a pharmaceutical grade product. And I think the name of the game in trying to source that is just buying it low and selling it high. So we're going to make an isolate product and then also a water-soluble product in case people want to put it in beverages or gummies or tinctures or anything like that. So we're going to make that out of the isolate as well. And so, yeah, that's where we're at right now. We're still pre-revenue, but when we do set up, that's looking like it's going to be in early June. We're going to have a lot of beginning product to process, and we're going to, luckily, my background in internet marketing has put us in a pretty good place in terms of where we're going to be able to get our name out there. And so we're going to really try to hit the ground running, and we're going to come in loud and fast and really try to become a big player in this CBD wholesale industry.
So you guys are making the product too, technically, right? Or,
oh, yeah. We're, right? We're a manufacturer of CBD products.
So it's going to be like a lab?
It's going to be a lab. We're going to go after, you know, GMP ISO certification probably within a six-month time frame. And so, yeah, we're going to be a fully legitimate laboratory operation. We're not totally vertically integrated because, you know, we don't control the farms and extraction.
Makes sense,
but
we
take it from there.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, I feel like that's going to be really big.
Yeah. It's every day I'm making connections that just surprise me in this space. And there's definitely, you know, a ton of potential. There's just a ton of kind of shadiness going on in the industry as well, because it's just kind of the rare time between CBD and, you know, cannabis and THC are rapidly becoming legal in all these states. And so it's just kind of a weird a weird industry in a weird time where, you know, you're getting to see an entire industry unfolding in front of your eyes within a matter of a few years. And so there's some pretty soft regulation out there. There's a lot of people who are coming in and, you know, selling products that they're claiming one thing and the product turns out to be something totally different. But, you know, we're going to try to help clean that up a little bit.
Yeah, like, I've seen CBD sold at, like, gas stations and, like, convenience stores, and I'm just like, I feel like that's probably not legit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, more power to them, but, yeah, there's definitely a lot of little, like, boutique shops where, you know, even if they're running, like, a clean, nice little operation, you know, more power to them. But a lot of the sourcing, it all stems from where they're getting their product then, and I know one of the main issues as of lately, because that tincture product line, I'm not sure if you guys know what tincture is.
Yeah, yes. I think that's what I use, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have tinctures like 10 feet away from us right now. I see it.
Oh, wow. Man, give yourself a little dose halfway through to the rest of the interview. So it's kind of been coming out in the last couple of months that a lot of these tinctures, because you know, people are sourcing them from China. They're made out of glass, and they're relatively expensive on a per unit cost, especially if you're getting a small amount. So a lot of people are sourcing these things from China. And when laboratories are doing, like, third-party tests on these tinctures, you know, the ones that are getting sourced from China, some of them are coming out to have, like, you know, a small amount of, like, metals in them.
Great.
And so, yeah, it's a little problematic in the industry right now, but...
So how do you know if a product is, like, legit and, like, tested? It's tested, right? Is that how?
Yeah. So pretty much everyone now in the industry has to, you know, accompany their product with it's called a COA. It's a Certificate of Authentication, which is just basically a third-party lab test saying that, hey, there's no, because this stuff's all grown on the ground, saying, hey, there's no pesticides, there's no solvents left in it, there's no metals, and this and that.
Wow. It's good that they do that now.
Yeah, so it's getting a little better. People are still forging a lot of that stuff, and there's still a lot of suspicious stuff. But, yeah, it's getting a little better.
So be careful where you're getting your CBD from.
Be careful now, yeah.
What's your company called?
Our company is called CBD Energy Labs.
And
we're not on any sort of social media yet, but we have a website that I created that may or may not be pretty cool. So.
Who are you working with? Is it just you, or do you have any partners?
Yeah, it's just me and my dad. We're tackling it in terms of you know, equity pieces. We're rapidly hiring right now, but you know, here in the beginning, it's just me and my dad.
That's awesome.
It's working out in a pretty interesting way. You know, one, we get to spend a lot of time together, and you know, we're always talking. And two, you know, we just come from very, very different professional backgrounds. I think in a lot of ways they're pretty complementary, where he's more of an old school, you know, financy, like, corporate guy, and I'm sort of a, you know, young, ambitious, like, ready to kick a door down kind of guy. And so I think we definitely, you know, cover each other's, like, weaknesses every now and then.
How is working with your dad? Is it like you guys are together all the time? Have you guys been traveling together? I know you said you were traveling a lot. Do you guys go on all these trips together?
So, it's cool. Yeah, we're still learning how to make it work in the smoothest possible manner. But I mean, you know, we have this prior relationship of being father and son, which is just a lot more personal and a lot less, like, red tape, and so we're still working out how to transition that into, like, you know, between the hours of 9 and 5, you know, talking to each other and conducting our conversations in a more professional manner. But yeah, it's definitely interesting, and it's just like with any relationship, it's we're spending a lot of time together, and so things can get crowded every now and then, but it's been fun so far.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for anyone that is trying to start a business but doesn't know what they want to do?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, my first piece of advice would just to be, don't rush it. Like, don't rush getting into anything, because, you know, it sounds cheesy, but when you rush something, you're going to make a mistake. Or, I mean, one of my biggest like beliefs is that whatever you want to do, whatever, you know, industry you want to be in, you have to be at least a little bit passionate about it, you know? I mean, a lot of people are going to tell you otherwise, and it's just for the money, but when shit kind of hits the fan at the beginning, if it's not something that you're, you know, at least a little dedicated to, or if there's, you don't have a strong why, I guess, as so many people say, then it's just really easy to give up, cut your losses, and try to move on to the next one. But it's just so often, and there's so many people I know out there that were really passionate about what they were doing, or they really believed in the product they were selling, and so that allowed them to kind of like get over some of those beginning humps and kind of push on forward, because it might not be, you know, a fault in the idea that you have at all. It just might be the fact that you just need to pivot a little bit on your execution. And so, you know, whatever you do, just kind of figure out what you're into, or figure out what, you know, sort of products or product lines you want to be selling, and just commit. I know, like with Abby, I know you have your own clothing line and are doing a pretty phenomenal job at that right now. And I'm sure that's something that you like love to surround yourself with. It's like your clothing line, it's all handmade. Like, you're making it personally. And so you're really like putting, like, what you're doing with pan making instead of drop shipping is you're really putting like the Abby rubber stamp on your product. And it's something that, you know, you created and you can really get behind. So.
Yeah, exactly. I literally was going to say I like 100% agree with you, because like when I first started, obviously I wasn't like making a lot of money. Like, I had to grow my business, and like I was a small brand, and I like didn't even care. I was like, I don't care, because I'm happy, and like this makes me so happy that I'm doing this. And like, I know that if I just am patient and I keep working my ass off, that I'll get to where I want to be. And like, then it'll be so worth it. And like, these few years of like shittiness will be so worth it. And like, but that was only because I was passionate about it. Like, that's the one thing like I tell people when they ask me, I'm like, you can't just like find something and be like, oh, that makes a lot of money, so I'm gonna do it. Like, you have to find something that you're at least a little bit like driven by, because like you said, when shit hits the fan, like, you have to have something that's like, all right, like, this is worth it, because like, it makes me happy, or I'm passionate about it, or like, I have this like vision for this that like I'm driven about. Or like, if you don't have that, then like, it, like you said, it's just easy to be like, all right, fuck it, on to the next thing. And then if you keep doing that, like, you're probably, I mean, maybe you're gonna get somewhere, but like, you could have gotten somewhere if you were just patient with the first thing, if you had a lot of passion for it, you know?
Abby, there we go. Man, I'm ready to run through a wall for you right now.
Oh, thanks.
No, yeah. So, I mean, just my quick elevator advice would just be, find something that you at least like to do, and as long as it's your product or service, as long as your product is good and you position it uniquely, you know, find a way to differentiate your product, even just a little bit, to cater to, you know, a niche market in the marketplace. And then I guess the third step in the equation is finding a profitable way to get your name out there, which is, that can be difficult as well, but I mean, if you can nail down those three things, then it's scalability just becomes a lot easier from there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that was really good advice.
You want me to talk about my first time trying to hire a Facebook ads agency, and it was just kind of a disaster?
Yeah, that'd be great. So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, maybe if any of your listeners is in the spot to where they are trying to hire a digital advertising agency for, you know, any service that they could provide, then hopefully this will give a little bit of value to them. So with, I think it was it Doctors Recommended? Hold on. Yeah, so this was for the Doctors Recommended brand. There's a particular supplement that is getting really popular now called a nootropic. It's sort of like just a brain-boosting supplement formula. And this one, the reason I really want to do Facebook ads for it is, you know, most of the products I was selling at the time were between $10 and, like, $25. So they just weren't high-margin products where I could have a lot of cash, like, to experiment around with, like, different forms of advertising. And so there's one product in particular called a nootropic that I was able to sell for, like, you know, $50 or $60, and I was able to source it for, like, $6. And so I was like, okay, let's do some digital marketing on this and, you know, set up shop on Shopify and Facebook. And one of the problems that I had was you know, it came time for me to hire a Facebook advertising agency. And so, you know, I got on Upwork, I got on a couple other of those types of platforms, and set up a bunch of interviews for one day. I think I interviewed about six digital advertising agencies for doing my Facebook ads. And the problem with that was that I really didn't know what I was looking for. So, you know, when I got on the phone with these guys, I didn't know what questions to ask them, and I didn't really know how to evaluate someone that had a different expertise than me. And so basically what I'm saying is it was really easy for these, like, Facebook ads guys to kind of BS me about, you know, making promises and their past experiences and exactly what to do in my particular situation. And so that's something that I've definitely been pretty weary about now as well when I'm, you know, we're looking to hire a lead chemist, and I'm sure within a few weeks I'm going to be on the horn as ZipRecruiter again, hiring a couple of lab techs and, you know, an account executive and a content marketer. And so something that I'm really weary about is at least getting a good grasp of, like, in the industry before you make a hire to someone or some agency for, like, a particular position. Because if you kind of go in not knowing what you're doing, it's really easy for someone to give you a super salesy pitch and make it sound good, and then when it comes crunch time for them to put in the work and deliver results, it just doesn't happen. And so I think it's really a lot easier to make a successful hire, which is, I mean, so critical if you just don't have that much money when you're starting out. I think it's a lot easier if you at least get a rudimentary understanding of what you need and where you need to go and what you're looking for, and just make absolutely damn sure that there's some sort of, like, case studies, get references, like, talk to some of their clients. If they're not willing to do that, I mean, I'm dealing with people all the time now in the CBD industry that, you know, the good guys will give me good references, and the references will have good stuff to say about them. So just kind of make sure and tread lightly when you're making your first hire, especially in an industry that has, like, digital marketing and, like, SEO and stuff that has, you know, a certain level of transparency, but you can also get kind of screwed a lot of times, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that sucks, especially when you're starting out and you don't have, like, a huge budget for that type of thing.
Yeah,
sure.
That sounds,
yeah,
like,
but
a lot.
I mean, a lot of times you gotta hire someone too. A lot of people try to do it all at once, and they try to do it all themselves,
and then they end up literally shitting on everything.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, no one's gonna know your business better than you are, but
you gotta outsource the shit you're bad at.
Yeah, if there's something you know you're not good at, just don't lie to yourself about it, and just fucking hire someone else.
Yep, that's why I have a social media manager. So I'm literally, like, if I used to post my Instagram photos for my business, and, like, I would sit on a photo and, like, change the caption, like, 14 times before I posted it, and, like change the edit. It's like, this is not, you do not need to be this perfect about it. You need someone who knows what they're doing and, like, knows how to write copy quickly and will just do it every single night for you.
That's funny. I bet you're brutal with them every once in a while too. You have this nice soft voice, but then I bet there's times you're just having a bad day where you lay down the hammer.
Why do you say that?
No, I don't know. It's just something I wouldn't expect, and I was just picturing it being funny, to be honest.
Okay, wait. So did she tell you that we're going to ask you the ecosystem moment? Right, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
did you think of
one? Well, no.
What do we say? So we basically end every episode with asking our guest what their F the system moment was. So do you have a moment where you said F the system in your career? Or?
Well, Abby and Gabby and the F the system listeners, I really don't have a particular moment, I guess, where I just came out and, you know, I woke up in the morning and my eyes were wide open. I was like, oh, F the system, I'm going to go change. But, I think just a lot of my young life and young professional life has just been kind of rooted in F the system. I mean, to start off with, I never got good grades. And so I knew that if I was going to make something really happen at an early age, it would not be able to be in the system, because I mean, no one would want me, honestly. No one would want me. I got bad grades. I just sucked at interviews. I'm pretty great at giving them. I'm very bad at like being on the receiving end of an interview. Something when I'm put in the spotlight, I cannot close the door. I just get too nervous when I'm put on the spot that much, and especially in college. But I guess I never really had any particular moment. I just knew that the system was never going to be for me in terms of corporate. And I could just see a lot of my friends more later in college. I know a lot of the earlier years you like to spend partying and just focus on grades. But I guess when it came more crunch time, when people were trying to get more serious interviews and really trying to figure out where they're going to go after graduation, there was just such a huge like cloud of stress that would come over them. And even now that I'm 24 going on 25, and so I graduated a few years ago, and seeing my friends sort of maneuver the entry-level employee atmosphere and just become, I guess, a little more corporate every day. And for some reason, this sounds kind of cynical, but I just feel like they have lost a little bit of that like personality that they had in college when things were just a lot less stressful and a lot less routine, I guess.
Yeah, because they're being fucked by the system.
Yeah, what did you call it?
I said, yeah, because they're being fucked by the system.
Oh, you just, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's funny. I mean, totally. It works for a lot of people, but,
No hating like on it. I'm not hating on it or anything, but I'm just saying, not for everyone.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. I mean, whatever you're doing, as long as you're happy, I really could care less.
Yeah, that's how I am. But that's how it is. I feel like a lot of my friends who are working corporate, they're just not happy. Like, that's what I get so many messages being like, I hate my 9-to-5. Like, I have this creative dream and I want to follow it, but, like, I don't know how. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are systems for a lot of people. You know, corporations are obviously for a lot of people. A lot of people are good at the politics and good at maneuvering the red tape, but it also isn't for a lot of people, and the people that it isn't for, I mean, most of them get forced into it, and so I guess a lot of them just don't really, like, totally act like themselves all the time, and are a little too stressed, I guess, at the end of the day. And like, for me, for instance, in all of my entrepreneurial adventures, and especially in the CBD space, I know the potential at the end of the day, and so I know how much work I need to put into it, and I am putting that much work into it, but the difference between me and someone that's working, you know, I guess an entry-level corporate job would be the fact that I'm extremely passionate and extremely, like, fiery about every aspect of what I'm doing right now. And so that just kind of makes work feel less like work, I
guess. Exactly, yeah. Which is the best.
Passion is key.
Well, you were, like, really, really knowledgeable, I feel like. So I feel like this will be a really great episode for our listeners.
Yeah. Thank you for getting on this call, Danny.
Well, thank you guys as well. And I look forward to you guys posting this episode.
Yeah, Obviously, when are you launching?
Close to Gabby, she'll hear about it if she doesn't. But
yeah.
Yeah, so do you have, like, a launch date yet? Or just, like, you guys are aiming for June, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah. I mean, our launch day, there's nothing too specific. But, yeah, we're going to start up in the beginning of June. We already have a good idea of the trajectory that we're going to go on. And I look forward in 6 months or so, come back on the pod and give you an update on what we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Yeah. We would love that.
Cool. All right. Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys.
Thanks, Danny. We'll talk to you later.
Oh. Yeah, sure thing, Gab. See you guys.
Bye.